give that shit up, you're going to concentrate on golf.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
You play ball like a girl!
Welcome to this week's edition of a Roy Orbison Tattoo Podcast with me, Colm, and my co-hosts, Bossy and Paul. This is the coaching podcast with a difference. We watch a movie, it might help if you watch it too, we get a special guest on, and we discuss the coaching from the movie and how it relates to our own experiences. So whether you're in the car, out for a run or a walk, or just using us to cancel out the noise from the kids in the background, we hope you enjoy.
Right, okay, so welcome everybody, and this week I'm delighted to say we are joined by Massey and Paul as always. Welcome, lads.
How are you doing, lads?
And I'm delighted that we've got former Dublin Intercounty senior footballer, Vincent's footballer, current UCD GA officer, Ger Brennan with us. So, Ger, thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks, Colm. Thanks, man. Thanks for the invite. Good to get involved.
Excellent. And I know you've picked out probably what would be regarded as one of the, I suppose, more enjoyable sporting films out there, White Men Can't Jump. But I suppose, what was your incentive for choosing this movie?
What I like about the film, lads, is there's probably two. When you sometimes ask people what their coaching philosophy is, or style of play, or teaching, and I suppose the two elements that I would have enjoyed as a player, in terms of what I would take from some of the better coaches I would have had, is the sense of fun and expressing yourself. The sense of adventure and just going out and see what happens. That's kind of one aspect of it. And then the other thing I kind of took from it is the sense of trying to do the simple things fairly well. And in Woody Harrelson, you have a guy, he obviously gets a slam dunk in at the very, very end of the film. But in terms of his weaknesses, he wasn't great. At the slam dunk, but he seemed to execute all the other aspects of the game quite well. And that's something as a player, when I was coming up through the ranks, you're conscious of what you're good at and a few things that you don't want to force during big games. Obviously you try to work on them in training, but being aware of your limitations to a point. So there are two of the kind of key things I took from it, the sense of fun and the sense of doing the basics well.
And just going back on the first part you said there about, the more freedom of expression as a player, like is it just because the fact that they didn't have somebody on the sideline telling them what they should and shouldn't be doing? Is that what kind of encourages that?
Yeah, it's something, Colm, that I probably, as I was moving towards the end of my Dublin career, say, While my last meaningful game was the All-Ireland Final in 2013, with injuries and surgeries and a couple of runs with St. Vincent's, I didn't get to retire, but I didn't retire until 2015. But I felt that the game was becoming so, maybe boring is a bit simplistic of a word, but it's... In terms of how I used to enjoy playing and trying to be creative from that centre back, sometimes quarterback position, to make some sort of comparison, but that was kind of being coached out of guys. I felt within the structure, say within Dublin. Now that has obviously borne massive results in terms of winning the five in a row, but the sense of what attracted you to Gaelic games and Gaelic football in particular. I feel, I'm just chatting briefly with Paul earlier on the text, that even with a lot of young kids, you know, you have fellas managing under 14 and 15, 16 football and hurling teams and ladies teams, and they think they are going to be the next Jim Gavin or whomever. And they're putting so many restrictions and constantly shouting. And, you know, we're all involved in sports and schools and colleges and development squads, and there's always the over enthusiastic parent, or being up in the club with the juvenile section where you have the enthusiastic coach who mightn't have played at a good level or struggled at a high level and maybe is trying to find himself or herself through looking after their kids team. But the constant shouting and communicating in can stifle a person's progress and creativity, Colm. And that's kind of my long-winded answer to your question. You know, even listening to Johnny Giles and some of the commentary going around Stephen Kenny, and that the obviously losing to Luxembourg was disappointing. It's very difficult to watch a game of soccer having come away from a decent Gaelic football or certainly a hurling game to sit down and watch it. But Johnny Giles always talks about young lads being that instinctive nature that they have to take a chance, to take a bit of a risk, certainly in our forward and offensive play, that innate nature is just being knocked out of fellas, and because they have to buy into the system at all costs. And so that's something which I really enjoyed actually with that film, you know, the sense of fun and adventure that was in it. So,
and do you think that's because of a sense of fear, or a sense that they have to buy into the system, like the fear of failure in terms of, I'll be able to do this in training, but if it goes wrong on a match day in front of X amount of people, I'm going to look like an idiot? Or is it that I have to do the culture of the team?
Yeah, any decent manager or setup, you know, the communication, obviously, and the leadership from the top down sets out the clear objectives of how the team want to play, Mossy. And obviously, within Gaelic games, you know, you're 14 outfield players. Each player is given a specific task to kind of take care of, first and foremost, with a bit of an overlap, obviously, given the nature of Gaelic games. So a player then, when he's taken to the field, know that he's being judged and on his ability to execute what the coach is looking for him to do. And if the coach says, you know, I want you to play in a particular way. So, for example, we've probably seen Kieran Kilkenny is probably a guy who for me, is getting back to his best in the last couple of seasons, where he's been a bit more, much more direct, much more creative. You know, for the previous couple of years before that, he's picking up maybe 40 possessions in a game, a little 10-yard hand pass to the left, another 10-yard hand pass or kick pass to the right. And having played a bit with Kieran and seeing what he was about, and I know he's big into touring too, you're just looking for him to actually really show us what you're made of, show us why you got picked for the senior team in the first place. But within the parameters of what's being coached from the management team, you have to buy into that, Mossy. So I'd say it's more, not so much a fear of at elite level, you know, the guys who are afraid or fearful of making a mistake in front of the crowd, or if they make a mistake and being afraid then to go out of and trying it again. If they're just worried about what the crowd think, well, those fellas ultimately don't make it. Where if you are doing what the coach is asking of you to do, well then, you know, you're going to probably secure your selection in the first 15. That would be my thinking of it, you know, my experience of it.
Yeah, and just like as I said, you spoke with Kieran Kilkenny there. I was fortunate enough to coach him for a year back in 2011 in hurling. And like, my God, like one of the most talented players hurling and football that's ever there. But like, for a lot of inter-county players, not on successful teams and outside of Dublin, let's say, will we see a lot of players retiring younger because of just that enjoyment, you know, the old bit of freedom and flexibility of playing and do what you do, you know? Like a lot of players get selected for county teams because of what they do in a less intense environment. Once they go into that kind of a set structure of this is how we play, this is how we keep the game close, like, are we going to see a lot of players from other counties retiring because of that kind of a thing?
I'd say, Colin, that's certainly a factor for some of these lads, maybe just saying that, you know what, I'm delighted to have been selected for the county. I've given a couple of years, but Janie Mack is much more enjoyable, you know, putting the boots in the gear bag, taking the hurl out, heading down to the local club after college or a week's work or an evening's work, and knocking a bit of banter out of the lads, and knowing that you will put in a good shift for the club, you will train hard, but there's just less stress or less pressure associated with it is probably the best way of describing it. I think, Colin, from my own experience, and 100% of inter-county players, I'm sure, will agree with what I'll say here, is that having played having gone playing your inter-county training and the inter-county season, and a couple of times during the year where you go back to your club, and certainly when inter-county season's finished and you're back with your club full time for the club championship, it's just a massive weight off your shoulders. You know, it's not a cockiness that you know you're going to be selected. You're still going to put your body on the line for your club mates. But it's just not that same level of scrutiny, I guess, on everything you do. There's a big freedom in that. The second thing, to go back to your question, with guys walking away or possibly walking away from the game, in terms of those set structures, like, and this is a bit of a tangent, I think competitive balance in Gaelic games is obviously something which is been discussed widely at the moment, between whatever split Dublin in two or Luxembourg in two, as it's going around recently. But I think having a competitive balance with our competition structures is probably more important to keep those inter-county players involved, Colm, as opposed to maybe being overly burdened with the stringent nature and the commitment that is needed for inter-county, you know.
And Jaron, talking about that, right, and being an inter-county coach now with a county who aren't going to win the All-Ireland this year,
mm-hmm.
but have their aims and are looking to do X, Y, and Z. How are you, or is there anything in particular you're looking to bring to that? And I know you haven't been massively involved yet. Is there anything you're looking to bring to that so it's as enjoyable as the club set up and they are... The lads are mad to go training on a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's a great question as well, Paul, and to share with you, I suppose, my brief experience with Carlo today. I think we were appointed maybe August or into September last year. So we had a good 8-week block with the lads, and what started off with a panel of maybe, I think, 55, 56, very quickly, we got down to a very solid 30, 32. So what I would say, that group we have now in Carlo, Paul, and I'll probably answer your question in a roundabout way, are guys who are not necessarily outrageously talented in terms of skill acquisition, but in terms of their psychological strength, their resilience, in terms of their commitment, and their desire to become better players, better teammates. Ultimately, they're the type of guys that you do want to go to war with, and they're the ones that you ultimately select. So from my point of view and how I try to plan sessions with Niall, crew, the manager, and two lovely fellas, local guys, Simon Ray would have played with Carlo, and Victor Doyle would have been involved with the under-20 setup for a good few years. Having a bit of crack is a huge part of what we do in designing the session, whether it be a couple of fun games in the warm-up with Kieran Nolan, a lovely S&C guy, all of the the drills that we do, they're all kind of games specific, they're all with the ball, they're all looking at trying to encourage guys to execute the basics well and that's again one of my probably coaching philosophies is the more often you do the small things well, the more success that you will have and the more enjoyment you will kind of get from it. So that's kind of what another aspect that we would focus on within those sessions is really just doing the basics well and that every kind of drill or small side of the game or conditions that we might put on the large side of games, it's all contextual. You're looking at real game scenarios, match scenarios, the different things that players are likely to face on the field. And a lot of the coaching, Paul, that, and again, it's not necessarily my style. It's just, and Mossy, you can probably relate to this. Like, I haven't taught in secondary school for 7 years, and even thinking back to our own teaching days, or when we were in school ourselves, as you don't always remember exactly what the teacher taught you, but you remember how they made you feel, and that empathy is something that I'm very much aware of in how I speak to the players in trying to push them on and drive them on, and knowing that if it's a 15v15 10-minute game, I can pull aside the left wing forward quietly, let the game go on, and I can just say, what you did there, what would you do differently, and help and try to work with that person and try to develop them from a technical, tactical point of view. And at the same time, then there's other fellas that, you know, they respond better to more of a kick up the arse, which is probably the type of player I was. I responded better to that. So, Paul, what did you remind me of what you said?
Do you know what, Jerry? You went off on such a tangent there. Just we let you tip away at it.
Yeah,
he did say he was going to go off on one down, Darren.
Making the session enjoyable, I think is huge. Now, the one thing that, again, and maybe because I was getting a bit older, and the fact I was probably injured in the last couple of years when I was playing, the amount of meetings that were going on, I hate them, to be honest. And they torment the crap out of me. I think when you're laying out the schedule for these lads, and again, myself and Paul, between UCD and DCU stuff, you're conscious of fellas' time commitments and ladies. We're starting at this time, we'll be finished at this time, and that's it. Just stop the session, stop whatever the meeting is. If there's a couple of extras that need to be done, you pick up the phone call, or maybe one or two guys, you might just have to ask them to stay back. But so, if you set out a time frame and what you're trying to do, and it's very clear the purpose of the meeting is X, Y, and Z, deliver the meeting, get the players involved, whatever way structures, and then get out in the field or get home and no hanging around. And so that's something that I kind of started. I began to value more the older I got, and it's something that I tried to stick to rigidly when organising sessions with the management teams, you know.
Very good. And I know I was talking to you there, Jerry, about like 5 or 6 years ago, longer than that maybe, and you were on about the club game in Dublin had come so far that you were saying what the commitment that you were given to the club or club players were given was what you were doing 5 years ago in the inter-county scene. Has that narrowed even closer, or has the inter-county gone another step further? And is it a good thing for clubs to think their county teams?
Well, the St. Vincent senior football team are doing everything that Carlos senior footballers do. So the Division 4 inter-county football teams, and I know it's not just a football podcast, but you lads can draw better comparisons from the hurling side of things, but, you know, the top 4 or 5 clubs in Dublin could compete comfortably in Division 3 of the National League. Is what I would say, and that's kind of down to numbers, and it's down to, you know, to win a Dublin championship, I think you need a couple of country guys involved. To win an All Ireland championship, you certainly need a couple of country guys involved. Just to add a bit of meat to the squad. So, the level of commitment, Pillar Caffrey, I started, I would say 2006. We're doing more probably now with St. Vincent's than we're doing in 2006, which would probably be a fair statement, except for the training camps and the overnight stays, where you wouldn't have them at the club. You do one a year, you head down to whatever, Waterford or Carlingford, and you do a bit of training, your few points, and you might play a game and whatever bit of team building. Cheap and cheerful in a hostel or whatever. But so the inter-county game, certainly weekends away, training camps for the day. It's a full-time job, and it probably is the guts of anywhere from 28 to 35 hours a week. I know some of the GPA surveys have been done. ESRI actually had a good survey done a couple of years ago where you picked up on that. But the level of commitment, now that does include travel time as well. Inter-county guys, so that probably ties in with your original question, Colin, as well. Probably why YFL is getting fed up and retiring early is, you know, the amount of hours that you have to give through is kind of huge, you know. But ultimately, you want to get out on the pitch and play, like, you know. So.
And like that, I suppose that's what Billy and Sydney ended up doing. Like they were both operating at, a somewhat similar, somewhat high level of basketball, but playing the game and having the crack of the game is something that they massively enjoyed, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think it is important. And I think some, not all county teams, but some county teams have pulled back a little bit on the amount they're doing, but the clubs are maybe at that, sorry, some clubs wouldn't be at that level of awareness that they do need to pull back a bit, you know? And like the thing we're talking about, meetings, like meetings and meetings that go over half an hour fucking drive me insane. And because they're some of them are meetings about meetings. And I remember a fella said one day, you know what, you go away and have a meeting with yourself first and come back and tell me what you're after coming up with. And then we just go with that. Other than having a discussion and people are going in with no set agenda. And we'll all chat about what we think could be done. Whereas it's nonsense, some of it.
Yeah. And given the size of backroom teams as well, with inter-county setups and the bigger clubs, you know, everyone probably feels they need to have a say as well. But that comes down to probably management leadership as well, that as a manager, that you in the same way that you're managing the players and setting out the clear goals and standards, that's the coach and the backroom staff you have as well, you know, they kind of understand what's expected of them, and that keeps things running more efficiently, like, you know. So see, there's a level, like even the whole skill acquisition side of things and fellas doing stuff on their own, like I think fellas will go and do that anyway, you know, going out poking the ball or practicing freeze, practicing shooting, you know, a lot of fellas will do that anyway, because that's what you did as a kid growing up. And I think that's an element of trust, that you allow players to do some of those extras away from the team training, and that in itself reduces the amount of time then that you have with the team then as well, because to be in a stress bubble for 10 months of the year, which is, I suppose, well, thankfully we're getting away from that from the county, and the structure of the competitions are obviously changing. But, you know, I remember from fucking November till whatever, August, September, with Dublin, you were fucking in a stress bubble the whole time, you know. So what I enjoyed about the film was both lads kind of ended up Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrison, they ended up kind of relying on each other at key moments throughout the film. And ultimately Woody Harrison lost his partner, but that sense of camaraderie that the guys had, that kind of bond, that kind of builds on the sports fields, is something that it's impossible to manufacture in sexual relationships or personal relationships, you know, when you're playing with someone at an elite level, going through the bit of hardship and the pain and all that comes with it. I think the camaraderie and bond that comes from it, that's actually, for me, my definition of success has probably moved in my latter years. And when you start having kids and you get a bit maybe wiser, I don't know, but you start looking at the more philosophical aspects of life. But
I just want to make sure we're right here now for a second. Yeah. You're after saying you'd rather be playing football than having sex, yeah?
Yeah. Well, so like if you look at the film, like at the very end where Gloria, you know, she's won her couple of thousand on the game Jeopardy. Show Jeopardy, and Wesley Snipes rocks up. The house has been broken up to, and he asks Woody Harrelson to bail him out, and Woody is obviously, you know, trying to chat to the missus, trying to, you know, sell it to her, but ultimately he loses out on her and goes and looks after his teammate. And obviously the joy and the bond that comes from that is something more worthwhile, you know. But and the other thing from the film, actually, to both lads are always kind of selling a vision to each other, you know. They're trying to kind of cajole and entice and inspire their teammates, saying we could have this amount, we could take these guys, I know we can do it. And that's in itself kind of strategic visionary or strategic leadership, to put some sort of term on it, where you're selling the picture to your teammate or to your player, and you're helping to narrate the story of what this is going to look like. and that in itself motivates and inspires confidence and action in the individual, you know. So
no, and you know, I think you're right there, because like you thought, and you mentioned earlier on about the different skill sets people have or whatever, and the two of them had different skill sets. And like Sidney Snipes needed the grunt of Woody Harrelson to do X, Y, and Z, and to make runs back and forth to allow him to do his thing. And there is an element of that within any basketball team or a football team or a hurling team or a soccer team, whatever it is. You do need people who have a different skill set to you, it's your boy. And looking at it then from a coaching perspective of like a coach or a manager has to pick a team, and he has to pick a multitude of different things. And Colm could be there, and he could be the second best at all three things, at three things that we're the best at. And like we're all rubbish at the other things, but you need that different mix. And it can be a difficult thing trying to get it right, you know?
Yeah. My own playing, I was never blessed with any sort of fucking national pace. And it was something I always worked hard on with the S&C guys. And I probably knew from the age of 17, 16, 17, that I just didn't have those natural kind of jets that some guys have. So, you know, my ability to read the game was something that I was nearly forced into without realizing from a younger age, where I was quite often in the position or blocking a hole where the ball was going to be in a couple of plays, and getting out in front of my opponents, trying to read his runs was something I was always good at. And then when I was in possession, my kick passing was always, I was a good natural kick passer off both feet, but my accuracy was something I really, really prided myself on, and never giving away possession. Very, very infrequently giving it away, and they were kind of aspects of my game, Paul, and the bit of grunt and stubbornness obviously as a defender is something that defenders need, that was obviously there too on spades. But you know, there's a couple of moments I remember receiving a ball in Croke Park. I get it on R65, and I might have 30-40 yards in front of me, and I knew if I put the boot down, I was probably going to be caught in about two plays. So I'd always only get away with one play, and then I'd be looking for the pass for the guy moving off the shoulder. And actually, my teammates, and certainly with Vincent, myself and Dermot Connolly, him being on the offensive 45, he knew I was always going to pass the ball within 4 seconds of getting it. And he knew he only really needed to make one good run. And the same with Mossy Quinn. Mossy not blessed with probably massive, massive pace, but himself and Dermot have this great kind of understanding and partnership. And Dermot will be turning and just drilling the ball into where he knows Moss is going to make the run. And that's kind of examples of how our different skill sets can kind of intertwine then, you know.
Sorry, Ger, in terms of the reading the game and being an excellent kick passer of the ball, what role did any of your coaches have in developing them? Or was it primarily through playing the game?
So yeah, my uncle Fran Brennan, my dad's brother, Fran would have played professional soccer and international soccer for Ireland. He had played with some dog for a long, long time. So Fran, my dad's older brother, was a big influence on me. And I have another uncle, Thomas Brennan. He would have been the Irish cross country champion senior men's before he passed on. So the exposure that my uncles had to high level sport certainly impacted on my dad and how he used to communicate to me. So I grew up in North Inner City, just off towards Estuary there. So one of the earliest memories I have is being in our front garden, which is only the size of a bedroom. And left foot, right foot, left hand, right hand, kicking the ball against the wall and doing 10 off each foot and trying to go back a couple of yards and doing 10 off each foot, each hand. And I used to do that the whole time. And after a while, my mother or older brother or sister would come out and say, "Will you feck off down the road?" Because I was shaking the whole house and to be trying to watch whatever was going on, you know. So that's kind of one of my earliest memories of purposely trying to improve skills, Paul. And the other thing then, when we were playing Gaelic football and soccer, but we played a couple of Gaelic football on the main road, just off towards Estrie. There was a paint shop there called Vinnie Burns. And when the shutters come down, that was the goal. But there was apartments above the shop and the windows were smashed a couple of times. But they're all tenement houses. And so the target used to be between the two windows, which is only, again, about 2 meters wide. And I used to take all my shots and used to aim for that from across the road, about 30 meters away, left foot, right foot. And you got quite accurate, funny enough, because you don't want to smash the window. And then if you missed the target from growing up on the road, there's a big lane going down to North Circle Road. You'd have to sprint 200 meters after the ball before it went down to North Circle Road and an ambulance took it up, or whatever could burst the ball. So those things actually improved my accuracy in terms of a kick passer growing up on the road. I'd have played schoolboy soccer, Premier Division as well, lads, till under 18. So I would have played at Belvedere and then Weft at Open Fingers as well. So would have won a couple of schoolboy Premier titles there and a couple of All-Ireland runner-up medals. So I was being exposed to different sports as well, and obviously Gaelic football is far easier to attain the skills than soccer or what hurling would be. So I was kind of lucky that way, that bit of exposure, and certainly soccer developed my ability to kind of read the game. And then I was either going to a rugby school, so I was playing senior cup rugby as well. So I ended up doing a bit of everything, and a bit of maybe toughness, which was instilled at home with the older brothers fighting over the remote control with a bit of bar of chocolate that was left. That toughens you up along with playing the rugby as well, you know. So
would it have been soccer would have been your first game soccer. Or
yeah, soccer, Colin, was the first sport, you know. So soccer was just a huge part. We were brought down to Fairview Park, so my dad would have been managing some of the younger teams down there, my older brother's teams, he's managing them, and I used to go down as well. Soccer, and the beauty of our game, Gaelic games, the communal aspect and where everyone belongs, soccer, the elitism of it, even from a young age of 12, 13, was something I didn't enjoy down at Belvedere, which is why you end up going up to Wefta, up in Finglas. And we would have bet Belvedere a good few times actually over the few years, but it was much more enjoyable playing from Wefta. But soccer was the first love, Colin. I only started playing Gaelic games with Na Fine because I went to St. Vincent's Primary School in Glasnevin, which is no relation to St. Vincent's GA club, but they're the same saint. But so Mark Cooper, who is older brother of Johnny, me and Mark were the same class, and it was through playing coming to Munn School in fifth and sixth class in the school, and Mr. Murphy, I can't think of his first name, and Peter Malumbi, who was the principal for a while, a few others, they got me involved, and I went up the road to Na Fine for a couple of seasons. Na Fine were brutal, Colin, at that age. And so you'd be playing football 1 week, hurling the next week. So my Saturday mornings was kind of rugby at nine, half nine, straight to a soccer game, and then you play your Gaelic football or hurling in the afternoon. And but after 2 years, I ended up going to St. Vincent's, and for a couple of reasons. One, I was friends with Bobby Doyle, son Ronan was in my class in school. He was involved with St. Vincent's, and mainly went to St. Vincent's because of the soccer mentality my family would have had, that these are a better club and you have a better chance of success if I went up the road to them, you know.
Wasn't a free pair of boots thrown in or anything, no?
So you're saying that Mark Cooper is the reason that you played Gaelic football, and it's the reason that St. Vincent's have won 2 All-Ireland club titles.
Yeah, you could say that, yeah. So brilliant. I was heavily involved in the Fianna up until the point that it was time to move, like, you know. And I kind of hadn't since, you know.
St. Vincent's was a big, that was a start of a stronghold GA school back in the day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it would have been huge, Colm. So Desi Farrell in 95, I was in, say, third or fourth class. And I remember Desi Farrell, Jason Sherlock, I'm sure a couple of others who would have gone through the school came in with the cup, you know. And I remember being in the hall and the lads up on the stage and thinking that this thing was cool, like, you know, and not really understanding it, not being usually inspired that I want to play for Dublin from that moment, none of that stuff, but just saying, God, it must be cool for those lads up there with this big shiny cup and everyone's shaking up, you know.
What year did you go to Belvedere then? Was that in later on or?
In 98, then I went in Mossy in first year. And so we grew up around the corner from Belvedere. So I would have taught to swim initially by brother Eamon Davis, is a Jesuit brother, still actively involved in the community. He's 90 odd, he's a great man. So he, part of the Jesuit outreach in the area, Mossy was. To give kids an opportunity to go on outings, to learn new skills, to learn how to swim, life-saving, and then the social diversity program or the scholarship scheme, which is still up and running, is something I was put forward for and accepted on. So for anyone listening, that's 10%, nearly 15% now of the intake in the first year each year. It's a kind of scholarship kid that comes in from a socio-disadvantaged area. And to give that kid an opportunity to see what they can make themselves.
You know? And did you find, just thinking of an ex-pupil I had before, that there was pressure on you to take that or not take that scholarship? Because I know of a pupil who was offered a scholarship and he turned it down because he didn't want to be perceived as above his mates, if you get me.
Yeah.
And it was a great opportunity for this person, a smart individual, a smart guy, but he'd just been dragged back. Not, you know.
Yeah. No, dragged is if you can use that word if you want, Mossy, but I mean
like with his mates, dragged back to where his mates are going to school. Yeah.
So when I, before I'd gone to Belvo, like we all knew those lads as the Poshies and they'd be going home to school. And while I never ever engaged in any bullying before I went to the school. I thought I engaged in bullying then, but a few lads I would have grown up with, they would have roughed up a few of the lads coming out of school for no other reason than obviously I'm a bit older now, but a lack of fucking maturity and understanding or purpose in themselves. So for me, honestly, I was absolutely delighted to have been offered a place in the school. Up until Christmas, I really struggled, and I was in a couple of rows with fellas in the yard, and my sense of belonging was totally at odds to who I was. So my few buddies growing up in the area, there was never any slagging of me. In fact, they were all inquisitive and about what it was like being in there, you know, what the private school looked like and whatnot. But I actually wanted to leave the school, and I remember coming home from Mass around Christmas holidays and coming from Garner Street Church and walking up towards Doors Estuary. If you go through that junction, that's in a place where I grew up. So I remember crying to my mother at the lights and saying, I want to leave. I hate the school. I want to go back to Vincent's, to my pals at Vincent's. And I just remember my mother saying that, look, go to the summer. Just promise me, get to the summer. And I promise you, if it's not working out, you can go back to Vincent's. And something, well, for me as a young lad, I still remember the weight off my shoulder that I'd obviously gotten this out there, that I was fairly unhappy where I was, but that I was confident that I could grin and bear for another few months, safe in the knowledge that we'd be going back to Vincent's the following year. But what happened after that was, particularly through sport, actually, and then particularly through rugby, and no doubt a lot of conversations that my mother was having behind the scenes with the hugely supportive teaching staff in Belvedere and Brother Eamon Davis. But I began to feel a real sense of purpose of belonging on the rugby field. I was now gone from the E team on rugby to being on the A team, and found myself in a leadership position, taking kicks, whacking into fellas, just doing whatever needed to be done, mostly. And so fellas began to look up to you in the yard because of how I was performing in the sports field. And then in the classroom, the academic side of things, I began to become a bit more confident too. And the grades started to go up because I realized that, you know, we're all pretty much the same. And I was good as all these fellas. And that learning actually is something I took with me now when I started playing for Dublin. And certainly trying to get onto the Dublin senior football team was And that's another learning, Paul. I know this is a very interesting chat, but when I talk about purposeful practice, kicking the balls against the wall or kicking it over the cars at the paint shop, not smashing the windows, but my uncle Fran and my dad in particular, when we were playing club championship, I was coming out minor in 2003 onto the under 21 squads, but when I was playing club championship, they used to say, make sure you knock the shite out of the established senior, the county footballer. And that's what I did. So that's pretty much, that was my strategy by getting as many opportunities to hit fellas. The only fella I hit, and I'm not saying I regret it, I hit physically, but he's a fucking man mountain, was Paul Casey. I went to nail Paul Casey one time, and he saw me coming and he stood his ground. And Paul is about 100 kg, it was just muscle. And I hit him, he didn't budge. I bounced back, I didn't hit the ground. But when the ball went up the other end, I was winded. So I was, you know, yourself and you're winded.
Yeah. Hiding it.
You're not trying to let anyone see it, yeah. So I said, yeah, I have a lot of respect for Casey now, but all the other fellas used to kind of show you away from the contacts, funny enough. And any of the fellas that did show you away, most of those, nearly none of those fellas made the cut when it came to the 2011 Hall Ireland winning team when they're patched, you know. So,
yeah. And Ger, in terms of coaching, would you be looking for players of that ilk who kind of engage and really want the physical part of the game, or are you looking for a different type of player, or a bit of both, or has it no bearing at all?
I'd certainly have an open mindset, Paul. I think if we were to sit down and to look at the key or the different positions on the Gaelic pitch, hurling and football, you are going to write down a couple of key attributes that you probably want this particular person, this particular position to have. So being able to, I think, one as a coach, know what it is you're looking for, I think is hugely important. But at the same time, having an open mindset and a growth mindset to see and to explore and try different things, and where other guys, you know, they might be down as a centre forward, which I was actually for underage and midfielder, but I couldn't really score too much, and I ended up being put back as a centre back. So as a coach, being able to identify, again, understand what it is you're looking for and what players fit that bill, and if not, can you maneuver things to try guys in different positions, and then whatever you're left with is what you're left with, and then you have to probably cut your cloth to measure, Paul. I think that's probably a key thing.
There's a real good book now, it's probably nearly 15 years old at this stage, The Warrior Game, Hurling the Warrior Game by Dermot O'Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes through each of the positions on the field and has three or four of the really established players who play there. They give their insight into what's required to play in this position. And look 13, 14 years ago, a lot of the positions have possibly merged a little bit, both in football and hurling, but there's still loads to be learned from it, particularly around, we say, developing the skill set of the game as you move along. Look, it's transferable to any sport, really.
Yeah. But
I really enjoyed actually that book, the way it was put together, in terms of going, if you want to be a good centre-back, you need to be able to kick well, you need to be able to retain possession, tackle well, and read the game. That kind of stuff. Yeah. You know?
The most important thing I look out for, Paul, is attitude, first and foremost. So, obviously, you know, as coaches, you have your kind of team standard and a couple of things that are non-negotiable. But obviously, different characters, different backgrounds, and that's that empathy we were probably chatting about briefly earlier. To enter into the guy's shoes, to see what's actually going on with him behind the scenes. So, when you have that bit of empathy, natural trust does form between kind of player and coach, and from that trust, all sorts of wonderful things can kind of happen for the player. But I think you have to go on attitude first, and attitude, character, whatever word you want to use. I think they have to be, for me, they're the first things that I certainly look for in picking or selecting the team, you know. So,
and just going back there, one of the things, Jerry, you mentioned about, well, trying to hit Paul Casey that time. it was kind of like Sydney had to actually see how good Billy was, you know. He had to be exposed to the situation. And like in your role in the college, and Paul as well, like, I think the college is really the only place where everybody's equal. You know, we have preconceptions of clubs and the type of player that comes from clubs, but also of counties. And like, if you think of Fitzgibbon Cup now in France, for instance, best hurler in the Fitzgibbon Cup for the last few years is a lad from Kerry. And I think the beauty of the college is you really just judge people on the person and the individual, like, isn't it?
No, it is, and because your contact time with the lads is so little, and again, you don't want to overburden them with too much detail. You want them to enjoy coming out and playing for the college, playing for the coaches, playing for their teammates, and then the bit of crack that comes with the bus journey home and wherever else after games and tournaments. So, I love college, senior college football and hurling, Colin, because, you know, while there is a bit of tactics there, it still is quite expressive. A bit like minor before I went to maybe under 17, but it's still quite expressive, where you're just looking to set as a coach one or two maybe structural things there, identify a couple of their key players, but you're not burdening guys with tape work or whatnot, and your approach is and preparing the team is almost 60-70% motivational, as opposed to, you know, 30-40% tactical, where elite sports has probably gone the other way now, where 75-80% is nearly tactical, technical, and showing a bit of motivation towards the end of senior club and the county. Certainly at the county level, it's probably gone that way quite a bit, you know. But there is something beautiful about watching college football and hurling, you know.
Yeah, and the players love it as well, don't they?
Yeah, I do. The challenge, and like, we've all been there. Like, I did my undergrad in Maynooth 2004, 2007, and you could still play Sigerton football and Fitzgibbon as a first year. So while I wasn't playing the hurling at that stage, I was playing, you know, fresher Sigerton under 21, Dublin, pushing for the senior panel, and the same with the club. Like, you were absolutely fecked, and you were going to nearly all the training sessions. And the best crack was, you know, I used to ring Dave Billings, Lord rest him, my predecessor. I'd be ringing Dave, telling him I'm under pressure with an assignment, Dave, you know. And so he'd be saying, is that the same assignment you were doing 4 weeks ago? I says, yeah. Because he knew you were going on the beer, or you were having the crack with the lads, and you were young enough and fit enough to probably recover in a couple of days for whatever the next training session might be. But the element of fun, and I think COVID has been good. I think for everyone to, you know, step back a bit and to, you know, look at what it is we're trying to do with some of these young men and women, and again, trying to add value to that probably student experience and life experience through participation in Gaelic games. And then at the elite end, if anyone feels they want to give it a go to play senior county football or hurling, you know, you do have to say to them, we will have a bit of fun, but this isn't going to be easy. But have a go and see what happens. But we make it as enjoyable as possible. And that's my kind of thinking on how we should be as an organization, you know. But I think we're getting there the whole time. I think the split season is great, certainly for the club and the county. I think that's a good thing going forward, in my own view.
Anything else on the film, lads?
Wesley Snipes is class.
That's great.
Just reading an article there by Malachy Clerkin in the Irish Times about White Men Can't Jump there. That's probably over a month ago now at this stage. But like, a lot of the people who were in the pickup games they were playing were NBA players.
Mm.
Like, athletically, and some of the things he was doing, he certainly didn't look out of place against them. And like, it goes kind of a tangent in terms of, so he obviously learns his lines, and I know there was a lot of freestyling in it for the the slagging they were doing, but they learned their lines. But he also has to learn how to play basketball. Obviously was proficient, relatively proficient at it, but is able to play and practice so much that he looked like a pro amongst pros.
Mm.
And that kind of element of, you know, artists, like actors or whatever, diligently applying their trade in that repetition manner, can, like, I think there can be elements learned there, as long as it's the fun things for Gaelic Games. Like he wasn't practicing, like he wasn't practicing running out doing shuttles. He was practicing the really fun elements of the game. You know, and I really enjoyed that part of the film, that it was there, like.
And I think again, my 5 or 6 years in UCD, and something which I fully appreciate even more is the training sessions for the hurling teams. You know, it's all with the ball, and football has gone that way too a bit now, certainly with me, what I do. But you know, everything is with the ball. You're working on the touch, striking, again, doing the simple things, doing them well, doing them often. And I think that's something that a lot of coaches who mightn't be as experienced or maybe as confident, you know, they need to move away from, you know, the mass runs or the long runs and things like that. And that ultimately this is a hobby, albeit elite amateurism is what we could probably call it at inter-county level, and certainly senior colleges then just behind it. That whole idea of elite amateurism is the elite, or the amateurism word, is something that we have to be always cognizant of, that guys are and ladies are studying, or they work, and that when they are coming out to come under your care and your instruction, that you do have to make it as kind of fun and enjoyable and as skills based as possible. And that is one great thing with the film, in fairness. But
the what do we think Billy jumped off to make that dunk at the end? the camera was well up.
and that's probably something we haven't touched on, but there are moments within, and we've all seen a player do something that we don't associate with the master strength, and just in the heat of the battle, you know, they do this wonderful thing that, wow, he did do it, he could do it, fair affects him, like, you know, that's great. So obviously behind the scenes, and I know I just touched on my own story briefly, you're aware of your weaknesses and you are working on them, but you're still very much aware of them. But, you know, there are moments in the game, in your career, where you do try the outrageous thing and it does come off, and you know, that's something to be enjoyed as well, you know. So
yeah, I've seen Paul do a backwards hand pass in hurling that I thought he was capable of. So there's the weekly shout out to the social hurling.
Gerald, appreciate this. I went down to a college match in Cork one day, and it was down in CIT with Keith Ricken, and chatting away and had a great chat with him or whatever. And I thought, you know, I think Colm has his social hurling on the Astro pitch in Páirc Uí Chaoimh that night. So actually gave him a show, have you got it on or whatever? And he goes, yeah, sure, come down. So went down in clothes that you'd nearly wear to a festival, the clothes I was wearing. But it was grand, because just went out and played a bit of hurling for an hour after doing a day's work or whatever, and it was grand.
No, I was just going to say thanks for having me on, lads. It's good to kind of use the old COVID time to be a bit more reflective, isn't it, on the why behind what it is we're doing. I was just going to throw in one great book. You mentioned the Warrior. What's it called, Paul? The Warrior Game?
The Warrior Game, yeah.
There's a great book I just finished there. Tony Dungy, Quiet Strength. He's the first African-American head coach in the U.S. Obviously the U.S. and then the first African-American head coach to win the Super Bowl with the Indianapolis Colts. But his... his coaching philosophy is very much based on kind of Christian values and how he speaks to staff and speaks to his players, and the type of guy that he wants into his program has to have some has to have demonstrated some aspects of those kind of those virtues. But his book is very much interesting in terms of his experience as a kind of average college footballer. Worked hard, got a Division I contract, got 3 or 4 years as a professional, but just wasn't good enough, and then went straight into coaching. And his kind of coaching journey, his coaching philosophy, a lot of similarities with John Wooden and Phil Jackson, the basketball coaches as well. That as a coach, if you can understand what it is that makes you tick, well then that will help you in how you go about doing your own coaching and whatnot, you know. So I just throw that book out there, lads.
Sure, thank you.
Excellent, sure. Thanks very much. I suppose one last thing that I think from the film that every person needs to be aware of is the 4 words that Sydney told Billy you have to always get right. Listen to the woman. And if you get that much right, the rest of everything else will look after itself.
Colm, I threw that down. I sorry, come across. I actually texted that on to Paul earlier. I think if you get a happy home environment, it is key, and not always necessary, but it certainly helps to a happy life on the sports field or coaching. You know, you have to look after your bread and butter first, and make sure things are right at home, which frees up mental space to enjoy the coaching and enjoying the playing side of things. You know, so
Absolutely.
Great stuff.
Thanks very much, Ger. Thanks for your time.
Bye. Thanks, Ger.
Thank you,
guys. See you later. Bye bye. Thanks, Ger.
We are into season 4 now, so thanks to everyone who has listened so far. We would be grateful if you would take the time to give us a retweet on Twitter or just share with your friends. It would also be great if you could give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It would mean a lot to us, and we'd really appreciate that. Hope you all have a great week. We'll talk to you next Tuesday when we're talking to Paddy Christie from Ballymun, and we are talking about the film A Football Life with Bill Walsh. Thanks, everybody.